This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
The PGA Tour is all systems go, and so is the new show, Early Wedge, on the CBS Sports Podcast Network. Join Sportsline experts Sia Nejad, Mike McClure, and Eric Cohen alongside myself, Rick Gaiman, Patrick McDonald, and Jason Sobel. 5 times per week, the Early Wedge provides the best information for DFS lineups, outright selections, and so much more. Follow and listen to Early Wedge in the Early Edge feed on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
All right, nice to be with you on a Thursday. First day of the NCAA tournament. We're going to be carrying some of the games here on Sports Radio 610 and on our sister station 650, The Bet. I know we're going to be carrying some during the day on 650. We'll get more information to you on that. And then at night, if you've been listening, we've been carrying the play-in games. There'll be games on at night here. A lot of Texas teams on the docket for today, including the Cougs at 1 p.m. So, We'll have you covered on some of those games. As far as the Texans go, they get Derek Stingley Jr.'s deal done yesterday in addition to a couple of other deals. Cam Robinson, they've signed most recently in Minnesota, best known for his nearly 7 years of work, or 8 years. He was drafted in 2017 with the Jacksonville Jaguars. He gets brought in on a one-year $12 million deal. Danielle Hunter gets a year tacked on to his deal and $35.6 million in new money for him. Some of that will be thrown onto this year. The rest will be next year. But Danielle Hunter will be around for at least another year after 2025. And then Derek Stingley Jr. gets his deal done officially yesterday. Gets announced. He does the press conference, and he talked about what it means for the Texans to invest in him.
I mean, it means a lot that they, you know, allowed me to go out there with my coaches, and they taught me this game and at this level, and they believe that I can be somebody to teach the younger people that's on the team. And you know, I'm not gonna talk in front of everybody, but I mean, I know how to be a great teammate. So I guess they believe in that. So I mean that's what I believe in. So
all right, yeah, he's a man of few words who puts his head down, comes to the building every day, does his work, and does it at an elite level. And the Texans have sent the message that when you do your work at an elite level, they will be happy to keep you around the building.
Yeah, the interesting thing about it is that it doesn't kick in until 2 years from now. So they have him under control for an extra year than I would have thought they would have him under control when they first announced it.
It's a less pricey deal on a per-year basis than it looks like from the reports.
Right, yeah. Well, when people were kind of shocked about the price, because it's a 20% increase over the $25 million per year, which was the previous high water mark. You factor in the inflation of probably a 10% rise or so in each of these next successive years. That's about, you know, it might be a little bit less with the cap inflation. That it makes sense that it was $30 million per year and not just a tick above $25 million per year. I guess the only concern I would have then is, hey, I laud these shorter-term extensions because it keeps the carrot on the stick a lot closer to the face of the player, and that you're less likely to agitate for something new. I don't know. I don't want to be overly naive about all this, but Stingley doesn't strike me as a guy I'm worried about agitating for a new deal 2 years into this one.
Not based on yesterday's press conference, for sure.
No, I think it's kind of like J.J. Watt. When J.J. Watt signed his big deal, it was a five-year extension?
A
six-year extension. Yeah. J.J. was always very open about saying, yeah, the idea is if you live up to your end of the bargain, you're going to be underpaid by the end of it, but you can't waste time or energy worrying about that. That's just an indication that you've played well. Mm-hmm. And I think Stingley, very much in everything that he says and the way he operates, I think he just wants to put his head down and keep working at football and not worry too much about the contract side of things.
Yeah. To that point, here was Stingley yesterday. How important was it for you to set the market in terms of average annual value of new money at the cornerback position?
I mean, I kind of went into this and went into this situation and was just basically just thinking like just playing football. Like that, I wouldn't really focus on like how all of that was gonna get done. But I mean, it got done, and I mean, it's cool. Like, you know, the market is different now, but that doesn't really have anything to do with me, really. But I'm just here to play football, so
okay. I don't know. I think if you kind of play that, and then you think about Deshaun Watson after he got his big contract, where Deshaun was breaking down crying and emotional of just when he got his renegotiation with the Texans. And I don't want to look, they're in different situations, obviously. I think Deshaun had a lot more riding on him in terms of you know, being the provider for his family and everything than Derek Stingley does.
That's true.
But so I'm not criticizing Deshaun for it, but for Stingley, it's just such a stark contrast that you can see. I think he's a guy that it's not like he doesn't care about the money, but it's 100% not his sole focus.
Yeah.
Compared to some other athletes, and it's a good feeling when you're a team that gives a guy a big wad of money. Ideally, it doesn't change their life at all. Like, obviously, it's going to change some things for them financially, mm-hmm. but ideally, it doesn't. They don't feel validated for it. They don't think like, oh, I finally achieved what I've always wanted. I think that Stingley is a guy that just genuinely wants to be the best cornerback in football and do it in an environment that he enjoys.
Well, I think to that end, he was asked yesterday, how'd you celebrate the new contract?
Everything was finalized. How did you celebrate?
Oh, I had me some crawfish. Oh, and that was about it. So.
There you go.
There's your story, everybody.
The awkward chuckles after the answers are my favorite. Back to what we were talking about him setting the market. I mean, obviously, the biggest beneficiary of the money itself is Derek Stingley Jr. and his family. The biggest beneficiary of the optics of setting the market, because it is kind of optics. If you average out what he's making over the 5 years he's going to be with the Texans, it's really about $22 million when you factor in that the next 2 years are still his rookie deal, the last year of his rookie deal plus the fifth-year option. The biggest beneficiary of the optics of him, quote, resetting the market, it's David Mulligetta, his agent. You know, that's the person who's wearing it on their sleeve that they got Stingley that contract is his agent, which that's just the game. I'm not saying that with any animus or criticism or shade, but the fact of the matter is, like, Stingley is a player I don't think is really all that concerned about setting the market, and it doesn't matter anyway. Like, I don't think people are going to watch Stingley run through the tunnel this year and go, there's the guy that reset the market. When they see David Mulligetta, they'll go, there's the guy that reset the market.
I always like, for Stingley, a few of his answers yesterday, you know, when people ask him about his father or just some of the other aspects of all of this, he really appreciates that he's in a situation where he has a lot of support, not just from his father, but from everybody like on his personal side, but also the people on the team and everything. And I think he's like an astronaut who doesn't have to worry about mission control. You're just like, okay, I'm an astronaut. I got a really specific job to do. I'm going to let the folks in Houston take care of their stuff.
Yeah.
And I feel good and solid about it. So I feel like Mulligetta is down there in the mission control doing his thing while Stingley can work on getting a screw unloose from the space station or something.
That's right. He talked about that. Actually, you mentioned his dad. He talked about that yesterday, the impact that his dad has had on his career.
Yeah, I mean, without my dad, like I wouldn't be sitting here right now. I mean, just with everything, like I wouldn't even be like who I am. Like I don't like everything. Like it's, that's all I can say. I mean, that wouldn't be me.
That's biologically accurate.
That's
very 100% true. Very astute observation.
We ran
there.
The paternity test, and it is 100% correct. He wouldn't be him without his dad.
50% of him would be way different than
it
is now.
Yes.
So and we've talked about this a bunch. Just the dynamic of a father who's very involved with his son in pro sports. Sometimes it can be awesome, and sometimes it can be a disaster. And with Stingley, it looks like they've got that perfect. The Tiger Woods, Earl Woods relationship where The father is a football coach, played football, knows what he's talking about, and he's been involved with his son, but his son is eager for it. It's not the kid. It's not the Todd Marinovich who just is just doing what his dad tells him to do. It feels like Stingley's that kind of kid that, you know what? Stingley always reminds me of some of those kids. I've got a nephew who's like this, Grayson. He's 4 years old, and if you roll a ball out anywhere within 100 yards of him, it's like a shark smelling blood. Mm-hmm. It's like that's what he's drawn to.
Yeah.
And if he's walking, when he was 2 years old, if he was walking by a TV and there were any kind of sport being played, he's just glued to it, and he's watching it. Mm-hmm. He doesn't care if there's a ball involved, he's watching it.
Yeah.
And Stingley seems like he was probably that kind of kid.
No doubt.
He was just eager for it, and he was in a situation where his dad could help him with it, and it's a really cool story.
Well, and doesn't, to the extent where he doesn't even really get involved in trash talk. You know, like, he is so hyper-focused on football. It's not just, hey, I'm letting my agent do the contract. Hey, each of these workouts I do is a step towards becoming a better player. You hear stories about Derek Stingley. He does not yap at all. Like, they were talking about that on the Pivot podcast. I think it was Stingley's dad that was talking about the fact, like, there would be guys, and Stingley was getting to that stage of football that with Ryan Clark, where they were talking about that stage of football where you start to get on the radar of colleges and things like that. And it would be a big deal for opposing teams to try to get Stingley in some way. And so they were trying to get in his head and obviously trying to make plays, were trying to get in his head. And Stingley was just like in his own world, man, just ignoring it and going and playing ball.
You know what? And that, for me, the one thing I always worry about is with quiet people or quiet kids in sports, you have no window into how they're processing things mentally. And so whenever there's somebody who's super, super quiet, you're kind of left to wonder, all right, how is he processing pressure? How is he processing criticism? How is he processing his own individual bad performance? So you worry about those kids sometimes. It was actually one of the most emotionally poignant parts of Andre Johnson's Hall of Fame speech for me was when he said, hey, to the kid, the people back in the neighborhood where I grew up, that quiet kid that never talked, he's doing all right.
Yeah.
You know, and I could just, you zoom back and you think about probably people that he had or teachers or coaches he had that just kind of wondered like, hey, Andre, you doing all right?
You okay?
And
yeah.
Andre doesn't say anything and you just don't know. You're left to wonder, is he doing okay? So at the cornerback position, especially where so much of the challenge is coming back from bad plays, forgetting mistakes and everything, you just don't know. And obviously Stingley's handled that remarkably well. You don't have to worry about him being a quiet kid and wondering what his emotions are. I think he's just kind of built to just, he just wants to play football. And if guys want to talk smack or whatever, cool. It doesn't affect him one bit.
Jim Adler, the Texas Hammer text line. Funny you say that. From his actual voice to what he actually says, he reminds me of Andre Johnson, is what a text. You made that comparison earlier in the show, I think, about him and Andre. You
know? Right. Well, when Stingley was talking about the team hasn't tried to make him something he isn't.
Yes.
That I think sometimes coaches will do that where they've got one of the best players on the team is a quiet guy and all of a sudden they want to turn him into an orator, you know, like hey, everybody respects you. Why don't you get up and give a 20-minute speech about it? Like, no, you gotta let your guys be your guys.
No doubt.
And leading by example is really the best form of leadership when it's one of the best players on your team.
We played this a minute ago. We'll play it again because there's a funny text as a follow-up to this. Derek Stingley Jr., how did you celebrate your new contract?
Oh, I had me some crawfish. Oh, yeah, that was about it. So.
Text message. I didn't let the laugh play out. Text message. I thought the same thing yesterday. This texter saying, with today's crawfish prices, he's irresponsibly blowing through his new contract. It's true, man. Man, it is tough out on those crawfish streets right now.
Yeah, what if he shows up 20 pounds overweight? With a pocket full of crawfish clubs. Then we learn that he's one of these guys that eats his crawfish with gloves. Yeah.
If he gets overweight eating crawfish, he's definitely blown through his contract. Dude, it's like...
That's commitment. He has the kind of commitment and dedication it would take to get overweight by eating crawfish, because that takes a good 8 hours per day.
Yeah, I don't know if you've kicked any tires on going and eating crawfish on a Saturday or Sunday. It's like cheap is like $10.99 a pound right now for crawfish. That's cheap.
Yeah. I don't. I try not to think about it anymore when I go out to eat. I've grown numb to.
No, but crawfish is different for me because there's a lot of work that goes. I like going out for crawfish for the social part of it.
Yeah.
But it is a high labor intensive food for very little payoff. You know.
So you're feeling like paying $150 for a session with a personal trainer or something. Like, yeah. All right, this is
dude.
All right. Okay, maybe no.
What? How many pounds? Do you like crawfish? Are you a crawfish eater?
Yeah, I do.
Like, how many pounds do you eat in a normal sitting of crawfish?
I don't know. I just eat until they stop bringing it to me.
Okay.
I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, I'm like 4 or 5 pounds. Like, I just think of how big. Like, if you order 4 pounds of crawfish at most places, it comes in like one of those big circle plastic tubs with the potatoes and everything else.
I'm going to be honest with you. I don't know what the portions are for things like chicken wings. I'm bad with this too.
Okay.
I still to this day, after having eaten probably in my lifetime at least 3,000 or 4,000 chickens total, I like when you combine all the meat, probably more than that. I don't know whether 10 chicken wings is enough or 50 is too many, because I can just keep eating them.
Yeah.
I've never stopped eating chicken wings because I'm hungry.
Yeah.
It's more of a time constraint. So yeah. I'll usually just order, like, I'll go, if it's crawfish, I'm like, okay, I guess 3 pounds or something. Mm-hmm. And then I'll just keep ordering more crawfish until it's time to go.
Yeah. The sweet spot for me, well, crawfish never fills me up. That's, but wings will fill me up. Crawfish, you eat crawfish, and I love crawfish, by the way. If anybody's listening that owns a crawfish play, I love crawfish, to be clear. It's just 15 minutes later, I want to go eat a steak. You know, like I'm hungry 15 minutes later after eating crawfish.
I don't know with any food like that. I cannot remember a single time in my life where I've pushed away from the table because I'm too full.
Yeah.
I think I'm able to digest it just enough that by the time I'm reaching peak, it's my stomach is like, all right, fine. I don't care if the intestines are ready for it or not.
Yeah.
Here she goes. Boom.
Wings, crawfish, donuts, doesn't matter. Yeah.
Donuts. You see me with donuts.
I know. That's why I said
it. I don't know.
It.
I honestly.
That's why I
said it. It was kind of a shock to me that people thought it was a big deal that I would eat a dozen donuts at a time. I'm like, well, but is that a lot?
They're there.
Like, I'm still there. I could eat a dozen more. I don't know.
Dude,
okay?
I got to commend you. Your restraint in the Texans press box to me, and I know that you do get your sweets on up there sometimes, but like
for the
availability of what's there, like there's still donuts left over in that voodoo donut bin that they've got there at the end of the day. And I'm like, how has Seth not cleaned out the rest of this bin right here?
Well, yeah. I mean, if you ever in the press box, you've seen me express disgust with myself because I'm aware of like that. I'm trying not to eat sugar at all.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden, an hour later, I've had 7 donuts. So there, yeah, that's, but it's not that I've never pushed away from the table being like, that's it, Sean, I'm done. I'm stuffed.
No, my favorite was where you expressed disgust with me for not stopping you from eating 10 ice cream sandwiches that one
right.
time.
Right. And the same, well,
it's
because
a big
I
pile like of wrappers
cream.
Next to you on the table.
I don't know how many ice cream sandwiches is a lot of
less
ice cream
than
sandwiches.
10. Less than 10.
But I could eat 10 ice cream sandwiches.
I know, I've seen
and
it.
I could easily, if you said, hey, do you want 10 more ice cream sandwiches? I'm like, sure.
Dude,
yeah, no big deal.
You're a machine, man. You're a machine.
But I'm not a good competitive eater. I can't do it quickly.
Right. No,
I like to enjoy my food.
It's a marathon, not a sprint. Yes.
Yeah, I once right. they thought they brought me. I went into an eating competition for charity in college once, and they thought they were bringing in a ringer. And the looks of disappointment on the faces of the people who thought I was a ringer that scared me away from ever trying to be a professional eater again. Yeah,
that's funny. All right, into the next segment we go with the Astros. What we've seen and what we've talked about this entire spring training, we got a taste of both. Yesterday. One good, one bad. What does it mean? We'll talk about it coming up next.